Hello, this is the 52nd edition of WFAE Talks. I'm Greg Collard, news director at WFAE, and this week I'm just joined by only one person.
Do you get the feeling there's a party somewhere and we're just not invited?
Yes. Is that the voice you hear is Tom Bullock, our money and influence reporter. And yes, it is just the two of us. Lisa Worf is...
She's working Sunday. We're taping Friday, so she gets the day off.
It's fair. She does.
And Ben's becoming a pirate.
Yes. Eye surgery.
He's going to become a pirate. Only a temporary pirate.
Yes. Then he'll get the other eye fixed.
So he'll be a two-time pirate. Yes. Two-time. I think we have a new nickname for Ben Bradford.
Two-time or two-time pirate?
Two-timing pirate.
Well, you had an interesting week this week, or especially Thursday. You were working on a story, a legislative story, and then all of a sudden we had news that the city was going to have a press conference at 12:30. Looked like they were going to announce a settlement of the settlement with the family of Jonathan Farrell, who was shot 10 times by police officer Randall Carrick it'll be 2 years in September. And you went down there, rushed down there to be there for the 12:30 press conference, and then you waited.
And waited. Yeah, it was really interesting. And I'll tell you, it's just proof that in a legal world, nothing is done until everybody signs the document. So here's what happened. It was fascinating to watch. So about 11:15, as you said, we got the press conference notice. It's like, okay, grab the recorder, grab the camera, let's get down there. And I was actually worried about making it just in case you hit traffic. You just never know. So we get down there, and 12:30 comes, 12:30 goes. And eventually someone from the city, I think about 12:45 or 12:50, comes out and says, okay, we're really sorry about the delay. There's nothing strange going on. The president of Costa Rica is meeting with Mayor Dan Clodfelter, and they were a little delayed. The mayor just needs to be briefed. We'll be down in 5-10 minutes. And, you know, in fairness, the president of Costa Rica was in town, so it wasn't just this crazy excuse. But none of us bought that that was the case. I don't think a single person there believed that. We're like, I don't know. You think if you have the equivalent of a state dinner in your city, you kind of build that into the scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 o'clock comes and goes, 2 o'clock, they finally come down and say, all right, so there's still going to be something. We're still going to make an announcement, but we're still working on the details of the settlement with the Farrell family. Once they're done, then they'll come down and speak. And
little red flags start to pop up.
Little red flags pop up. And it was pretty funny. So at 3 o'clock,
I said, this is getting weird. Let's do a live hit on this at the 3 o'clock newscast.
So we did a live phone interview from Government Center, and at 3:15, all of a sudden they come down and say, hey, they're coming down. And that's where they actually got to the settlement.
Well, they obviously heard our newscast.
Obviously, clearly, and the power of public radio.
Exactly. So it was, as we expected, the settlement with the Farrell family, $2.25
million. $2.25 million.
How did they arrive at that number?
We don't exactly know. Obviously, it's a legal settlement. This is a discussion between the Farrell family and the city. They've been in mediation for months. The suit was brought not long after the shooting, actually. And so everybody expected that this was going to get settled in some way, because if it makes it to court, since this is a civil wrongful death suit, you're in a civil court, the standard is lower to me. In fact, it's easier for the prosecution or, the people who brought the case to win. You don't need that unanimous 12-person vote as you do in a criminal case.
Right.
So it's not uncommon in cases like this for there to be a settlement. I will actually go on to say it would be uncommon if they actually went to trial. So the $2.25 million is more, we know, than they've paid in the past. We know that in January of 2014, they settled a lawsuit with another police shooting. A man was climbing a cell phone tower and was shot dead by a policeman. That was $700,000. So this is significantly more than what they have paid in the past. They were asked, is this the biggest one in city history? The city attorney, Bob Hageman, said, well, no, we've paid out this much before, but he didn't say about the specific case, if it involved police shooting, if it was some other kind of legal settlement. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they were happy to get this behind them, they being the city. And I think that's why they announced that press conference so quick, even though the ink, not only was the ink not dry, it wasn't even on the paper yet. So the city obviously is ready to get this behind it, because it's also in this awkward position when it comes to Officer, you know, Randall Carrick. They stopped funding his legal defense. They brought up charges against him. They're supporting those charges against him. The charge that Officer Carrick is facing is voluntary manslaughter. And that trial is going to be on July 20th, or at least it's scheduled to start then. So it would have put the city in this really awkward position of supporting the criminal prosecution of somebody they are also a co-defendant with in a civil case. So they just wanted this whole thing done.
Do you think this has any effect on the trial or on the outcome of or on the jury pool? I mean, that's an interesting thing.
It's a really interesting question. I mean, if you think about it, you know, it's about 2 months away.
Yes.
And so what you have here is you have the city coming out and saying, you know, in the terms of the settlement, they say we accepted no fault, no liability, which is standard on a settlement. That's pretty common. But we're going to pay the Farrell family significantly more, three times more than what we have paid in the past. It's not a hard leap to say this is the city saying something bad went down here and we need to pay you, and it was bad enough that we're going to pay you significantly more. So when it comes to the jury selection, all this news about the settlement is out there now, right? It's floating out there. People know how much they paid and that the city paid significantly more than they had in the past.
And it's so close to the trial.
And it's only 2 months away. So if I was on Officer Carrick's defense team, I would be thinking, well, hey, this could be potentially tainting a jury pool. And they have already asked for a change of venue, meaning they didn't think that their client could get a fair trial in Charlotte. That was denied by the judge.
And that was before, obviously before the settlement.
That's exactly right. So I'm curious to see if they either appeal that ruling or file a new motion because of this, because it's been all over the news. And, you know, when it comes down to cases, and it really, you know, I've known lawyers who have said for a long time, all cases are won or lost in jury selection. And it really is important. Now, another thing to bring up, though, is look at a far more high-profile case. Let's look at the Janar Tsarnaev case, you know, the Boston bombing case that still took place in Boston. They had 7,000 jury members called, I think, potential jurors called. They had to whittle that down to 12. They still found a way to have a trial. So, you know, the judge may say, the judge in the Carrick-Farrell case may say, you know what, we can do it here too. Right. But it does raise questions.
All right. Well, other stories you're working on, you're going to be into a lot of budget matters next
Fun
week.
Fun with numbers. We've got, it's a math geek's dream week next week.
So it's, in other words, it's not a journalist's dream week then?
We're
notoriously bad in math.
We are notoriously bad in math. It's true. So we have two big budgets that are coming out next week, or at least the process is continuing. Here, locally in Charlotte, we've got the continuation of the city's budget. And the city, for everybody who doesn't know or who wants to hear the facts again, is in a $21.7 million hole. They say it's the worst hole they've seen in a long time, far worse than anything they saw during the Great Recession. It was brought on by really two things. The first thing was the loss of this thing called a business privilege license tax, which was $18 million. That was a tax that was abolished by the state last year. And then there was the county, you know, property revaluation, which didn't go so well, had to be redone, and those numbers are way lower than what they were expecting. So now everybody's trying to sit down and figure out how do we plug these holes. And that's why you hear all the trash talk and trash jokes and all these things, because there's a trash component to the budget. But the key thing to know about coming up week is we'll finally start seeing more bright lines drawn between who supports increasing property taxes in this conversion for your trash pickup fee, where the city says, you know, most people, 80% of people will actually pay less, but that means 20% of the people will pay more, and some significantly more. And who is not for that move? And it's doubly interesting because raising taxes, always, always controversial. This is an election year, which makes it really, really difficult to do.
And how many have taken a stand that they're not going to support raising property taxes in any form?
By my count, it's 5-5 with one still, I don't know a good read on her yet. So the people who are against it, you have the two Republicans, Ed Driggs and Kenny Smith. They think it's a bad idea. You also have, however, Michael Barnes, the mayor pro tem, who is running for mayor. He came out earlier and said that he didn't support any kind of tax increase, no matter what, and that the city needed to cut its way out of this. Then you have Claire Fallon, who said she's not going to raise taxes as so long as the city's Gold Line project is going on. And then you had Patsy Kinsey, who also said, I'm not interested in doing this. So those are the five against. For the on the four side, you have Greg Phipps, you have LaWanna Mayfield, you have David Howard, you have Autry and Austin. So that leaves one person I'm still trying to suss out, and that's Vi Lyles. And Vi is an interesting case because she is a former city staffer. Mm-hmm. She actually has worked on budgets from the city staff side, but she is also an at-large member of the Charlotte City Council, which means that she doesn't have one district to represent. Right. She doesn't have to focus on just the views of that district. She's got to sell herself to the whole city. And, you know, if you take someone like Ed Driggs, who comes from a very wealthy district, and they're like, man, we're not interested in higher taxes. We'll stick with the $47 trash pickup fee. It's easy for him to take a stance. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. LaWanna Mayfield's the exact opposite case. It's easy for her to take a stance. Yes. So at large, much more complicated, much murkier picture.
Well, and then also there's a state budget.
Oh, yeah. The state budget. Yeah, it'll be busy. Sunday night or Monday morning, we're going to get the House of Representatives budget that's going to come out. We know a couple of details. I'm kind of loath to bring up the numbers I've seen floated around because you never, you know, they're still working out, they're tinkering. But they will publish their budget either Sunday night or Monday morning. It will be a roughly $22 billion state budget. And this will fund everything for the next 2 years. This is the key piece of legislation for every single session. And this year, the House gets the honor of bringing out the first legislative version of the budget. So they'll get that out at 4 p.m., I believe it is, on Monday. We're going to see the House Finance Committee go through it and give their ups and downs on what they like and what they don't and what they change. And then on Tuesday, it goes to the Appropriations Committee. And then if it fast-tracks and there aren't any major hiccups, and I've got to believe that there are not going to be any major hiccups with the House. They tend to be a little bit more united. You know, they don't put their stuff out quite until everybody agrees. Mm-hmm. But we could see a floor vote on this as early as Wednesday or for sure by Thursday.
Yeah, because of the supermajority and everyone, is that part of the
reason? That's exactly part of the reason. I mean, it's always tricky when you talk about the Republican supermajority because there is no monolithic Republican party. So you do still have factions. And in North Carolina, you know, one of the most powerful faction fights that goes on is urban versus rural. Right now, that balance seems to be tilted far to the rural. So, you know, we'll see what kind of impact this has on cities or larger municipalities or larger counties. But, you know, they tend to play well a little bit better. And then, of course, after they pass the budget, it goes to the Senate. And the Senate always has their own ideas of the way things are supposed to go. And then, you know, eventually a compromise will be reached. They send it off to Pat McCrory to sign it because the governor has to sign this one. But, of course, Pat McCrory has his own budget. So he may have issues with this or that, but needless to say, it'll be an interesting week. We'll have a better sense of exactly where we're going on some of the more important issues like education funding.
Also regarding the legislature, they're getting involved in some local, redrawing some local districts. That's something that you were working on when news came of the settlement with the Farrell family, but the legislature is looking at redoing the districts in the council districts in Greensboro and the county commission districts in Wake County. Is there something else there too?
Oh, there's a lot, but it's not just about districts. Really, what the focus is and what you're getting at here is if you think about a classic Republican Party, like if you're going to treat it like classic Coke, what is the defining factor of the classic Republican doctrine? And that's small government, right? That localities do better on their own, that there doesn't need to be this – there's this great speech, and I'm going to use a clip for it, I think, in the story from Ronald Reagan in 1964 when he was talking on behalf of McGovern. And it was basically you don't need this group of legislative elite in some capital to tell you what to do. Government should be smaller. People should have, you know, localities should have the freedom to run themselves. So this self-government on a local level is really been a defining characteristic of the Republicans since at least 1964, right? Mm-hmm. They don't like the Department of Education, think everything should be done locally. They don't like the EPA, they think everything should be done locally. So why is it, and this is what I'm trying to get at, why is it then here in North Carolina with two supermajorities for the Republicans in the legislature and a Republican governor, that you start seeing all of these bills coming down to affect localities in really, you know, not unprecedented, but really strange ways. And they're happening a lot. I mean, you talked about the two districts that were redrawn. I count at least eight bills dealing with local school board elections, whether they're partisan. I know of two bills about recall, potential recalls for school board elections. It's this really local focus that's fascinating because they really are starting to delve into a locality that by doctrine they should normally see as being like, you guys do what you do, you know how to do it better.
But at least in the case of the proposal to redraw some local districts, those would benefit, it appears anyway, the local Republican Party.
That's exactly right. And it also, there may be a broader issue here, which is the way districts are drawn now, not just in North Carolina for, you know, statewide election, but in North Carolina for national elections, in every state. You know, gerrymandering has become such a common phrase for a reason. Mm-hmm. And both parties do it. But both parties in safe districts are worried about, when it comes time for election, they're not always worried about a challenger because the districts are often drawn in a way that secures that party's representative. They're worried about the primary, right? They're worried about a challenge from someone else in their party. And more often than not, that challenge does not come from the center. Mm-hmm. It comes from the, you know, farther towards the extreme of the party. So how better to show that you support and you, you know, are part of the Republican establishment or the Democratic establishment? They do this as well. Then helping others of your same political ilk get elected. And whether that is in county districts, whether it is on city councils, or whether it's on school boards, if you can show that help, it's a way to secure yourself, to secure your political flank so you don't get a primary challenger. Mm-hmm. And that will, I mean, that's definitely going to be brought up in the story, and it does play a role in all sorts of things. It's just classic politics, and it happens whether you have a D next to your name or an R.
All right. Well, look forward to hearing that story. And, gosh, how are you going to – you'll be busy with budget, but hopefully you'll get that done next week.
Oh, I'm going to get it done. I'm dying to get it done.
But wait, I'm hoping you do.
Before we go, I have to ask about the biggest news of next week.
What's that?
The biggest news of next week. Greg Cullard, tell me about Field Day.
Field Day. Oh, I'm going to be volunteering at my daughter's school and being in charge of tug-of-war or – some kind of water game, whatever they put me in. And my wife, we're both going to be volunteering there Monday morning. It's going to be so, yeah, I'm putting off work for a few hours to come in late Monday afternoon.
The question everybody wants to know, though, will you be wearing shorts?
Absolutely.
I've never seen you in shorts. Wait, really? Do you wear mandals?
No. What is a mandal?
Man sandals.
No.
I don't know. I may have to send a photographer over
to see. I'm not ashamed of my legs. Maybe in a few years I will be, but not yet. All right, Tom. good talking to you, and we'll have a good rest up this weekend because I know you're going to need it next week.
And next week everybody will be back.
Yep.